Today we're going to talk about the 10 reasons to move to Visual Studio Online. So what are we going to cover specifically in this session? So first, a quick intro into what Visual Studio Online is, so we're all on the same page and know what we're going to talk about afterwards. And then we're really going to dive into the 10 specific reasons that I thought would be interesting for you as kind of reasons for you to move to Visual Studio Online. And then finally, we'll close up with a number of next steps. So how can you get started yourself with Visual Studio Online? So first, I want to start with a small cartoon. So if you look at the software development process, from getting the start of your project where you have something, you have some ideas, to make that into really great software, usually goes through a number of hoops and a lot of steps and side steps to get there. So usually it's not really a streamlined process. What we want to do is we want to make that process a little bit more structured. And to make this process more structured, we typically look at what we call the application lifecycle management. So the entire lifecycle of your software development project. So from planning the work that you want to do. So what are basically the requirements for our software? What do we want to achieve? Then going into how do we develop those specific requirements. So what needs to happen? So from those requirements, we are typically going to define some lower level requirements. We're going to define some development tasks, some test tasks, and so on. And then we hand it over to the development team that will write some code, who will hand it over to a test team that will test what has been developed, whether that matches our requirements. And then finally, we're going to release that into a production environment where we have the operations team assisting the development team. And once in production, of course, that's not where it ends. We're going to monitor the application. Is it running well in the production environment? And basically, what can we learn from the current running of the application? And we learn from the users. Maybe they'll have new requirements. Maybe there are some bugs that appear. And that will feed then back into the planning phase where we are going to take that feedback into account for yet again another cycle, another iteration. So we typically talk about iterative development, where we are going to do those cycles over and over again to improve the software that we built. So this is what we typically call modern application development. Now, Visual Studio Online basically gives you the tools to cover those different aspects of this entire life cycle. So from defining the work that needs to be done, all the way to putting it in production, of course, doing the development, and also learning and feeding back into that planning phase again. What is important there, Visual Studio Online, as you can see here, it's cloud collaboration tools. So it's basically a solution that is hosted in the Microsoft Cloud. So in the Microsoft data centers, and it's accessible for the entire team. As I said, we want to cover the entire application lifecycle management. So from planning, so typically the business user that defines what needs to be done, over the development team that is writing code, to a test team that writes test cases and runs tests, to the operations team that basically monitor the application and deploy the application. So there's something for every single role inside of the software development team. Now, going a little bit more in detail, so we got those four big phases as part of the entire life cycle. If you look at the different features that we provide as part of Visual Studio Online, you can see that there's a number of items for every single phase there, and we're going to cover many of them in today's session. So here you can see Visual Studio Online basically is there for the entire life cycle of your software development. Okay, let's start off with the kind of the key reason why you would want to move to Visual Studio Online, and mainly from an infrastructure point of view. So as I said, Visual Studio Online, it's a cloud-based set of services, and we're hosted in the Microsoft Data Center. So this means that you don't have to have a server infrastructure to host all of those services yourself in your own environment. And because it's a set of cloud services, we will make sure that those services continue to evolve and that you're always basically up to date with those services. Just yesterday, there was a new set of services or some new features that were rolled out as part of Visual Studio Online. So it's a set of services that continue to evolve over time. Now, having said that, so Visual Studio Online is a cloud set of services for those people that still want to host and still need this application lifecycle management solutions, but can't go into the cloud. There is the equivalent solution, which is called Team Foundation Server, which is basically running on premises. And as you can see here, both solutions, whether it's Team Foundation Server or Visual Studio Online, provide you again that end-to-end set of services to manage the entire lifecycle. Okay, now let me now quickly go into a small demo. Because it's all nice, set of cloud services. How do you get started with this? For this, I'm going to switch to my desktop. So you should see the desktop coming up quite quickly. So, and as it's, you should see the browser now here. So what you see here is basically the visualstudio.com website. So in here, you get the link to Visual Studio Online, where you can say get started for free. So basically, to get started with Visual Studio Online, the only thing you basically need is a browser. So if you go to get started for free, what you'll see here is you get your own your information as linked to your Microsoft account. And if you already have a number of accounts, you'll see them listed here. But here we can create a new free account. So if you do this, what you'll see here is that you'll be able to create a new account. The only thing we need to provide here is kind of a prefix of your account. So we can put here Visual Studio Online webinar.visualstudio.com. So this will always be kind of the suffix for the URL. The other option that you can choose is basically where your service, your account will be hosted. So it's either Western Europe, South Central US, or it's Australia East. Okay, and then we can do create account, and then it's a webinar. So this is a globally unique URL, as you could see. So we then create our account. What you'll see is that in a minute, 2 minutes maximum, you'll have your account created. So here we can see that's even less than a minute, the account has been created. So now we have basically an account in which we can then create what we call team projects. So team projects can get any name. So my first project. Yes. We can choose a project template. This will define basically the steps, the processes that you want to follow as part of your software development. Process. So there you can choose for Agile, CMMI, which is kind of a more elaborate process template where you do a lot of formal steps as part of your software development, or you can use Scrum, which is quite often used. And the second option that you can choose is your version control system. So let's go for Team Foundation version control and create a project. So again, now once we have this up and running, we'll basically have our location, our team project set up with source control in there, with possibility to create builds, create tests, and so on. And of course, defined work items that we need to use. So here you can see in pretty much less than a minute, we're up and running without having to deal with any infrastructure whatsoever. Okay, and here we can see a dashboard where we have a number of short links and information about our project as we go. Okay, so that's how you get started. Take your browser, you need a Microsoft account, and then quickly create a Visual Studio Online account, and then we can start creating team projects. Okay, now let me switch back to the presentation and go to our slides here. There we go. Okay. Let's switch to the second step. So first great reason is there's no dealing with infrastructure. Now secondly, agile planning. Typically in software development processes, process, planning of the work that needs to be done is either very elaborate, where you write tons of Word documents and PowerPoint presentations and maybe some diagrams and all that thing. But usually it happens in a quite an informal process, or it happens really by a separate team, which is often disconnected from the actual project team or the development team, which kind of gets into the problem that they work really disconnected, and that development teams don't necessarily write the code that matches the functional requirements that were put up up front. And the same thing goes for testers. If they're disconnected from what you need, what you planned, well, they're going to test the wrong things, or and so on, and you'll end up with software that really doesn't match the initial user requirements. So we need something that really ties in, where you have visibility of what needs to happen to all the teams, to all the members of the team. Now, agile planning really helps you to do this in a really agile process, in agile manner, where you don't have to go through a lot of hoops just to get this information available across the entire team. So how we do this in Visual Studio Online, again, we have all of the tools that we need. So here you can see we have our project that starts planning some work, defining some requirements, maybe defining some lower level requirements. And then basically what we do is we need to manage the work. So once we have our requirements, we need to decide who is going to do what. So we need to define implementation tasks, test tasks, and so on, maybe deployment tasks that need to be defined, and they need to be assigned to people within the team. And then finally, once we've assigned some work to the team, of course, somebody's going to be interested to track that process. We need to be able to get a view on how things are going. It's not because you assign work to people that it works gets done in time. Maybe there are some issues that come in between. So we need some tracking of progress in that mix. So how do we do this with Visual Studio Online? So there's a number of tools that we have there, and you can see here Kanban. Which is basically a way of displaying tasks in a more visual manner, where you have a number of boards where you can slide tasks from one phase, from one side of the board to the next, to indicate where a specific task is within the process. We'll have scrums and backlogs, and also we'll have a number of dashboards and be customized. So here you can see an example of a Kanban board. We could see the number of tasks that have been assigned, that have been active, some that have been resolved, or maybe have been closed. So this gives you a really visual representation of what needs to happen by whom. Okay. And as you go to your Scrum, you're basically going to assign the work to people, and assign that work to people also assign it to specific iterations. So as I talked about earlier in the presentation, we have these iterations and what we call sprints. But we need to assign work for a given sprint, a given iteration. So what is the work that we're going to do in the coming 2 weeks, 3 weeks? And then finally, we'll have some dashboarding. For example, here you can see what we call a burn down chart. So how are we doing in terms of work? How much work are we delivering every single day? So you get a very visual representation of the progress of your work. And you can add some diagrams, some charts in addition to get more detailed information of the current state of the project. So let me switch back to the demo again. Switching to my desktop. And let's see how we can do this. So I'm switching here now to a project that I have already created within Visual Studio Online previously. So it's called Tailspin Toys. It's basically an e-commerce site which allows you to buy model airplanes or paper airplanes. So here you can see our dashboard. So for the sprint one that we see here, the active sprint, there's some work still to do. So there's still 30 hours of work to do. Here we can get a view on our burn down chart. So we had some work that was added, and now our work is really progressing. So we can see the burn down going basically down as work gets closed. Okay. So on our Visual Studio Online portal, we can go to the work section that you can see here. If I click on this one, this will give us access to how we deal with work, or what we call work items. So first off, what you see here is our high level features that we want to implement. So you can see that we can have our items, our features, we can rearrange them either because some features are more important than others. We can add new features to our feature backlog. So for example, let's so as it's an e-commerce site, we want to add maybe shipment tracking. Just add it here. Just like that, it gets added at the current location. But maybe this shipment tracking should be all the way at the bottom, so it can be rearranged. These features. You can see its current state is new, so just a new one added. Maybe there needs to be some process where we need to approve and then put the specific feature in progress as we start implementing. So this is the first step. We define this is a high-level feature that we want to implement. Okay. Now, of course, there's more. There's some more detailed what we call backlog items that we need to add in there. How do we basically implement all this? So we're going to add some detailed backlog items to do all of the implementation, add all the tasks that needs to happen to get this tracking, shipment tracking inside of our e-commerce site. So what we're going to add is, well, we need to probably communicate with Logistics API. This one. And then probably we'll also need to visualize the shipment tracking info in the web UI. There we go. Just added these two here. They are by default added at the top, but we're going to move them all the way down here because we don't yet want to use, they're not top priority inside of our backlog list. So we can start adding these works. Now, what you can see here is there, you can see here mapping of what we've done so far is we've just created some detailed backlog items, but they're not linked to our feature, our high level feature. So how can we map those? Well, we can just drag and drop them and drop them inside of here, our feature. So the add shipment tracking, just like that. And there's basically a mapping now or a link between a backlog item and a high-level feature. Okay, so this is nice, nice and easy, something that you can do on a touchscreen. You can drag and drop your items just as you go on a big screen with everybody in the team around this big screen. Okay, so again, this is just some high-level defining of tasks that needs to happen. Of course, we need to assign some efforts in there so we can look at the detailed view of, for example, this item here. So what we can do here, we can add a priority. We can change the effort. So for example, the effort for visualizing the tracking information, I think this is going to be an effort. This is my kind of a logical effort indicator as is being effort 8. Okay, we can just save this one here, close the screen. And there we go, to have this information. Now, as I said, still quite high level in terms of what needs to happen. What we can do here now is we can add a task. This is going to be an implementation task. So what needs to happen to visualize? So we'll have to implement the tracking backend. It's probably going to take us 20 hours of work. There we go. We can close this one here. And we'll probably need a second one. And this is going to be implement tracking user interface. There we go. And this is probably going to take us 15 hours. We can save this here. Here we can see, we have now added two tasks which are linked to the specific backlog item, which in the end is then linked to our high level feature, which is the shipment tracking. So this will give us the vision, the transparency that we can report across all of the items in our project. Okay. Now, again, now we've just created these backlog items, these tasks, but they're not yet linked to a specific iteration. So when are we going to implement these? You can see we have some work here. You can see this on the iteration path for sprint one. We have some work for sprint two, again, some work for sprint three. How can we assign this to a given sprint? So we can do this by going to the detail section and then assign it to a given iteration. But what is easier is if I collapse this one here, if we take, for example, this item here and we want to implement it in sprint, let's say sprint three, I can just grab it and drop it here on sprint three. And all of a sudden you can see that the backlog item and all the tasks have been assigned to that specific sprint. Communicating with the logistics backend here, again, we're going to put it in sprint three. So this is kind of easy to rearrange work, assign it to a given sprint, and we can then go into, well, what does a given sprint look like? So here, our sprint one that we're currently working on. We have here two backlog items with a number of implementation tasks that you can see here. Okay, and this is kind of the work that is currently being worked on. Yeah. So these are the lists. One of the things you can see here on the right hand side is basically the work distribution. So we see here that there's two people working on this specific sprint. So that's that would be me, and this Anne, who will basically has 20 hours of work, but she's only 16 hours available for this specific sprint. Maybe she has a day off, maybe she typically only works 8 hours a day, and there's only two work days remaining inside of her current sprint. So how do we go and reassign work? So for this, what we can do is we can go to the board visualization. Either we can reassign it by going in this list, but what's easier, we can look at here at our task board, and this is going to be our Kanban board, where we can see for a given backlog item, there's a number of tasks that are being worked on. One which is still to do, one which is in progress, taking 14 hours, and then me here I have working on this shopping cart functionality. I have one task that has been completed, one working on, and a new one. So what we can do is just reassign, for example, this one here, make this assigned to me, and we'll have 6 additional hours. If we then go back to our backlog, we'll see that the capacity will have changed. You see that all the bars are kind of green. So Anne has now 14 hours of work with 16 available. I have like 16 hours of work with 16 available, which is kind of feasible to do. So this way you can quite quickly visualize the work that needs to be done through the kind of task boards. Reassign work quite easily. If I start working on this specific task, I can move it in the in progress phase. And if, for example, this one here, adding and removing the front end has been done, I can drag it here. And as you go, or as work progresses, we can also change, for example, the work that's currently been done. So this is the remaining work. Let's say there's only 5 hours remaining. There we go. What you'll also see is here at the top, you can see our burn down chart. And as you move items to the done stage, or as you change the remaining work, you'll see these graphs also update in real time to get a real time view on the current state of the project. You'll see this quite clearly if I move these two items here to the done stage. You'll see that our burn down really goes down now. There's not a lot of work still to be done in this specific sprint. So you can see that work is really going down here. Okay, so get it. Real-time views here. So this is one way of visualizing. One thing we can do as well is then instead of these burn down charts and this kind of list information, we can go to what we call queries, work item queries. So in here, what we can do is we can have, there's a number of existing or predefined queries, but we can just create a new query. Let's say I want to create a new current sprint query. So here, for example, let's and sprint. How do we define this? So here through a query editor, where we can say the work item type needs to be of type task. The current state is then different from done state. And it needs to be all the tasks in the current iteration. So that would be the iteration path. Would then have to be equal to, and here we have some placeholders, we can say the current iteration. And then save this query. If I run this query, we should see that there's, for the current iteration, a single task that is still unfinished. Yeah. We can start adding a chart here as well, so we can visualize the information as we go. So for example, here we could have a bar chart where we group by the current state and see the number of work items that are currently still to be done. Yeah. And again, as you kind of move your tasks in your task board. Let's take this one for the current sprint, for example, just to see the impact on our chart. Let's say that this task, which was done, let's say there's still some work to do. 5 hours of work to do. Okay, we then move back to, well, this one is saving, so it's automatically saving. There we go. As we go back to our queries, our chart that we have here, back to our unfinished tasks, see that we have basically two results, and in our chart we should now see one that's still to do and one that is in progress. So again, you see this is all real-time information, real-time reporting that you can do. And one of the nice things is you can pin now this graph to our homepage to kind of have our heads up display on the current state of the project. So for the current iteration, current sprint, we have one item to do and we have one in progress. And this will, again, update in real time as people within the team modify the information. Okay, so this kind of how you do agile planning. It's quite easy inside of your browser to go through all of the different steps to do so. Okay, let me now quickly switch back to the presentation. There we go. Now, one of the things is, I mentioned the Visual Studio Online is basically for all of the members inside of the team. You saw already the browser interface. Not everybody is familiar, well, probably familiar but is not really comfortable with using a browser for doing all of the work. Maybe a project manager is more used to working with MS Project for managing work. Or maybe if he needs to do bulk updates or do some reporting, maybe he's not going to create those graphs inside of the browser, but maybe he wants to use Excel, because that's the tool that he's familiar with. So Visual Studio Online basically comes with a number of Office add-ins. So one of which is here, you could see the scenario of a business analyst that needs to define functional requirements or needs to define screen layouts. Screen layouts, visual things, very often people use PowerPoint for visualizing information, visualizing screens. So we have a set of an add-in inside of PowerPoint, which allows you to create storyboards for your application inside of PowerPoint. And that will sync again to those Visual Studio Online services and store the information centrally inside of your team project. Or if you need to do some work planning, well, maybe you're familiar to do this in Excel. Again, there we have a plugin so that you can quickly and do bulk edits of your work items. Or as I mentioned, you could use MS Project. And again, you'll have an add-in. All of the information is stored centrally, but you have basically a client application that allows you to use a tool that you need, that you like most for dealing with those that backend information. And of course, there's Visual Studio for the developers, which we'll see in a minute. So developers can use their development tool. Now, we go into defining the work. We can use the tools that we like. Another kind of interesting or important reason for you to move to Visual Studio Online is basically, you may wonder, what is all this cost? What if I have a lot of projects? What if I have a lot of source control repositories that I need? Because one of the key components in software development is, of course, source code. You need to store that in a source control repository. So with Visual Studio Online, what we give you is basically unlimited private repositories. So the source control repositories are private. So unless you have access to the team projects, no one else can see them, can see your source code. And basically what you can do is you can add as many team projects to your account as you want. So you pay for an account, you have a free offer, I'll see this later. But basically the amount of projects that you create in there is basically unlimited. So you can create as many as you like. So for every single team project, you can create a repository and just go and write your code, do your version control. And as you saw at the initial demo, version control is done through either Team Foundation version control, the thing you know already from Team Foundation server, which is a centralized version control system, or you can opt and use Git, which is kind of a more open protocol for doing version control. In which you have decentralized version control. And no matter which one you choose, you can access again through Visual Studio, get your source control in there. And it really doesn't matter whether it's Git or Team Foundation version control. See here, we have all of the features that you're familiar with. We can do check-in, check-out, or commits and pulls and push requests, as you know from Git. We can do side-by-side comparison of changes that have happened to a specific code file. That makes you go to file history. So I'm going to quickly show you how you can do this. Switching to the desktop again. So I'll be opening up here Visual Studio. In this case, it's Visual Studio 2015, but you could use previous versions of Visual Studio as well. One of the things is if you want to go to and open up your team project in Visual Studio, you can start from the browser and click here at the in the home section of your team project just to open in Visual Studio. It will connect the Team Explorer to your team project and you can then open the source code. Or we can start straight from Visual Studio and go to what we call the Team Explorer add-in. Which you can find through by default it's opened. If you don't see it, you can go to View, Team Explorer, and it will open up this add-in here. Yeah. In there, we're going to click the Manage Connections button, which is kind of the big button here, and then do Manage Connections, Connect to Team Project. So we can select the Team Foundation server or Visual Studio Online server in this case, and then just select the team project that you want to work with. So in this case, it's going to be Tailspin Toys. You can connect to this one. And as you can see here, I have there in there one solution. Click on this one here. And this one is a team project that is using Git as a source control mechanism. So we can get all the sources with Team Foundation version control. This would be a Git latest version. In Git terminology, we're doing a clone. So we're getting all of the sources into a local directory. Just cloning all of the source files to my local disk. Now this was cloned and now I have a solution which is sitting here, which I can now open, double clicking on it. And it will open up in the Solution Explorer. So it's loading a number of projects as part of that. This takes just a minute for it to load all of the projects. It's quite a hefty solution, so it takes some time to load it up and completely. There we go. Should now have it in our Solution Explorer. There we go. That has taken some time. So you can see if I collapse all of them, we have seven projects in here, amongst which is a web project. Now, how do we go about and deal with source code? As you can see here, each of the files has this little lock next to it, which means that the file is under source control. Let me do now a quick code change. And as this is a demo, all code changes are typically very easy. So for example here, you know, there's a bug in the footer information. We should probably update the year to make it more recent. So we can just change the file. As you change a file, you'll see that the log has changed into kind of a check mark. You can see that a file is, there's a pending edit happening on the specific file. Change this one here. One of the things I can do, when I have it open, I can do a commit or a check-in. I can look at the history. For example, here I can see what are the kind of the differences that have happened on this file. I can right-click, for example, and compare it. Previous version, you can see there was an error here. I had to remove an invalid character and just do a diff of my file. Now, let's say we're done. What we can do is we can commit our change, give a commit message, and let's say update footer information 2015. Commit my change. And in Git, what you need to do is you need to commit first locally, and then you need to sync your change into the central repository. So here we can see by syncing, we can do a push. We have an outgoing commit. Once we click this button, what will happen is it's going to push basically our change into the central repository, and we'll have all of the changes available centrally in Visual Studio Online. Yeah, we can see this as well when you go to the code section here in the browser. What you'll see here, we can have a history, and we should see the history of commits. So here we can see our updated footer information to 2015. If we click on this one, we get a view inside of our browser into what has changed. Again, we can see our side-by-side comparison of what we modified in this specific file. So again, you could use either the browser, you could use Visual Studio to get that same information. Okay. So this is kind of how you deal with your source control inside of Visual Studio. So file history, comparison, checking in, checking out. So regardless if you're using Git or Team Foundation Server, you have all of those capabilities. But you have your source control repository managed inside of a central repository, which is sitting in our data centers, basically. Okay. Let me again now switch back into here. So it's quite compelling that you don't have to manage anything of any infrastructure for having your source control up and running in a reliable manner and accessible basically from anywhere, which is also important. So you just need a browser or your Visual Studio, just connect your team project and you're up and running. Now, an additional reason to move to Visual Studio Online. So you've seen me use Visual Studio to connect to my Visual Studio Online source control repository. Does that mean that it's only for people using Visual Studio? So not really. It's basically for any developer that we can have access to. So one of the things you could use is you could use Visual Studio, but just as well, we'll have an Eclipse plugin. So if you're doing Java development or some development that is happening in the Eclipse development environment, you'll have a plugin similar to the Team Explorer sitting inside of Eclipse. Same thing with Xcode or any other development tools, or even the command line. You could use through the Git commands, you can connect basically to Visual Studio Online from pretty much every tool that supports Git. So this is quite compelling as well. So you don't really need Visual Studio. You don't really need to do just .NET development. If you're doing Java, you're doing iOS development, you're doing Android development, just as well, you can benefit from the set of cloud-based services to get your source control inside of our repository. So because we're using Git, you're able to do so. And for Eclipse, we'll have the extended experience where you can do basically just the same thing that you do in the Team Explorer in Visual Studio. Okay, so this is quite nice. So just to quickly show you how we can do, for example, command line access into Visual Studio, into Visual Studio Online. I'm going to now switch to a command prompt. You should see it coming up. Okay. So what you see here is just a command prompt. And what we do is, as our Tailspin Toys is a Git repository, what we need to do first is our clone command. So we do a Git clone. When we do a Git clone, we need kind of the address of our Git repository. Where do we get it for Visual Studio Online? Yeah. So what we do is we switch again to our browser. And then here in the code section, we click just on code. What you'll see here at the top is a clone button. If you click this one here, you'll see the clone URL. We can just copy this URL to our clipboard. We then go to our command prompt. And the only thing we do is git clone, press enter, and it's going to retrieve basically, it's going to do a get latest or in get the git clone, get all the sources locally. And there we go, it's checking out the files. And we should now have a Tailspin Toys directory. If I do a dir, you can see here I have all of the files downloaded, and I can now start adding new or start modifying the code that's sitting in here. So let's, for example, add a just a README file, just an empty one. If I do dir, see here a README.txt file, and we're going to add this file to our repository. So I'm going to do a commit minus m. It's going to be added a readme. Well, there we go. So what we've done now is we've done a local commit. I need to push now this change into our central repository. Now with git, we're going to do a git push origin. It's going to be master branch. We only have one branch. In this this team project, and this will basically copy our changes into the central repository. So if we then go to our browser and look at our history, we should now see a new commit that has happened here. You can see added the README file. So no matter if I'm using Visual Studio, the command line, it could be just any other tool that uses Git, you can do your work and interact with those services. Go. Let me now switch back to my slides. There we go. So really accessible from anywhere using any tool. Now, sixth reason is dealing with continuous integration. So what is continuous integration is basically how do we move from code that's been written, building it centrally, building it on a build server, and then potentially deploying it into a test or a central development environment, or maybe a production environment. Yeah. So building, compiling on a central build server, and then deploying it, or doing other steps that we need to, that we want to do, potentially also adding testing. So for that, we have basically what we call a hosted build server. Again, we are hosting the build server for you in our data center, so you don't have to spin up a build server yourself. Although you can if you want to. So you can have your own build servers as well as part of Visual Studio Online. So we're going to define what we call a build template. We can add some build steps. And as you can see here, we can even add Android or iOS or do some gulp or grunt or whatever steps you want to do as part of your build process. So you can add custom PyroShell scripts as well, or command line scripts, just if you want that extra level of flexibility. So you can do so. Once we have defined our build definition, we can then look at the details, configure it as we go. And then, of course, look at and run your builds, and your builds can be triggered automatically. You can do manual queuing of builds as you go. So quickly going to show you this. Again, in a demo. So how can we build our e-commerce site, our Tailspin Toys site? So for this, again, in our browser, we are inside of our Tailspin Toys team project. We have the build section here at the top. If we click on this one, what we can see here are our build definitions. Just for your information, you see your build definitions, you can see XAML definitions. The XAML-based definitions are basically the old style of creating your build definitions. If you can, try to move to the new style of build definitions. So you can see here, we can see our build definitions and current builds that have been run. So if you have, I can look at a run or a build that has been performed today. You can see here, it has succeeded. It ran for 3.9 minutes. We can have the entire log of the build. We can see, we can have an access to our artifacts, or our drop folder. So we can download basically the binaries that are a result of our build. We can look at what has happened. We can download our log files and just get more detailed for every single step that has happened. We can get the detailed log information of what happened during our build process, because that's important. If it's running somewhere on a central server, you still need to have access to all of the log information. If something goes wrong, that you can diagnose what really happens to your build. So this is looking at existing builds. Now, how can you create a new build? So we can do an action and create a new build definition. And there's a number of templates. So we have the standard Visual Studio. We can use Xamarin for iOS or Android, or just do Xcode builds and then do OK. Once we do that, we'll get a predefined template of a build definition, which already contains a number of build steps. So we compile our code, we run some unit tests potentially, and then we're going to publish it to a drop folder. So we have our binaries. We can add some build steps if we want to. As you can see here, there's a whole lot of predefined build steps, some utility steps, so you can do command line, batch scripts, PowerShell, and so on. If we deploy, we can deploy it, for example, to an Azure web app, or just copy it to a Windows machine. So quite some flexibility to fine-tune your build process. One of the things that's important here is the trigger section. So in here, we're going to specify, do we want continuous integration? So as somebody checks in code or commits code to the repository, we are going to automatically kick off a build process. Or we can also schedule it at specific days and times. If we want to have a daily build, a nightly build, or a weekly build, we can do so as well. So continuous integration versus scheduled triggering. Or just as well, we could just queue a build if we want to. So queue a new build as well if we want to do manual building of our sources. Okay, so this is kind of continuous integration, which is quite easy. Again, just go through your browser, define your build process, and do whatever you need to do, potentially deploy as your sources get built. Switch back to the next section of our presentation. There we go. Now, so we've gone through defining some work, tracking work, writing some codes with source control repositories, either using Git Steam Foundation Server. We've gone through continuous integration, so we can build our software and deploy it. Now, somebody needs to test our software as well. So there's two aspects. So the first one is test planning. So testers typically, they write test cases. They have a set of dozens, hundreds, maybe thousands of test cases that they need to run through. Typically, they write them in Word or maybe in Excel. But what we've done is, inside of Visual Studio Online and Team Foundation Server, is basically give a capability to a tester where he can, in a structured manner, do some test planning. So define your test cases inside of a test plan, in which you can then, in your test case, define what are kind of the steps that I need to perform as part of a test, and then also run those tests. So you'll see here what we call on the left-hand side here the test runner. Which is sitting next to your browser, or it could be a desktop application as well, where we will give you kind of the steps for that specific test case. You can add comments, you can mark steps as being okay, not okay, augment with some screenshots or some attachments. As you go through the actual test execution, we can then also report on those tests, again, using some graphs as you go. So this is kind of one step of the testing phase. So again, all this done through the browser. Secondly, also linked to testing is load testing. So again, there, load testing specifically, if you want to simulate a lot of load, typically what you need is a lot of hardware to be able to do so, to simulate like 10,000 users accessing your website, or 100,000, or maybe 1 million, requires quite some infrastructure services. So what we do is we're going to leverage basically, scroll to this one here. What we're going to leverage is basically the power of the of our data centers, of our cloud, because there's basically unlimited resources there available for you to simulate load on your website. So one of the things you could do is you can just do cloud-based load testing, where you can say, I just want to ping and test the availability responsiveness of my website by going to a specific URL, to this kind of the easy set of load testing. Or just as well, kick off a more complex load test, which we can define in Visual Studio, and then kick off that load test. But it will be running inside of our data center, so you don't have to set up that test battery of infrastructure to run your load tests on your application. And you get some reporting in there, so we can do so from our browser, do a simple load test, or we can do a more advanced web and load test inside of Visual Studio, but again, running our tests using Visual Studio Online. I'm quickly going to show you how this is done. So again, it's amazingly easy to do so. So switching back to first, I'm going to show you kind of the easy way of load testing. Let's go back to our Visual Studio Online project. So one thing that might be confusing, if you go to the homepage of your team project, so I'm going to leave this page, you may not find the load testing functionality. If you go to the test section here, what you'll see here is basically the test case management, where you can define your test cases. You can see here we have our test cases here, one failed, one active. I can run them if I like. But there's no load testing here. For that, you need to go not to the team project, but you need to go to your account. So you click on Visual Studio Online. So you need to be at the account level, not the team project level, to do load testing. Okay. Once you do so, you can see here our team projects, and you'll see here the load test section. So click on this one here. This is where you get access to your load test functionality. So in here, we can just type the homepage URL, which would be for me, it's tailspintoys.azurewebsites.net. Just going to do a homepage. I can define where I want to load, where I want to test it from. So I'm going to take Northern Europe. And then we can define how many users do we want to simulate, like 25. It needs to run for 1 minute. We can add some think time in between requests. And then we can do a browser distribution. So these are all predefined settings, and we can just do test now. So it's really a quick way to load test your web application in here, or it could be a web service as well. So something that has a URL endpoint that is publicly available. So with this, you can see now it's acquiring the resources, so it's spinning up the resources to do our load tests in our data center. So while this one is running, I'll show you how we can do an advanced load test. So for this, I'm going to switch, and we'll come back to this one here in just a minute once it's finished. If we go to the Tailspin Toys Visual Studio solution, what you can see here, I've added a load test or a weapon load test project to my solution, and I've created a load test. So my load test consists of a specific web test, which fires off a number of requests. It goes through a purchase cycle where I'm buying something and go through the shopping cart experience just to run it. So, and then I create my load test, which contains a specific scenario. Now, how do we make this run inside of Visual Studio Online? So inside of the solution, what you see here is a local test settings file. It's kind of hidden inside of the solution items. But if you double click this one here, what you'll see here is on the first page, it shows you the test run location. So by default, it's running locally on your computer. However, if you want to use it Visual Studio Online, you can just click this one, run test using Visual Studio Online. And that will basically be the only thing that you need to do just to make it run inside of Visual Studio Online. Load this one here. One additional setting that you can configure is inside of your load test. You'll see here the location. And I can just set location for cloud-based load tests. It's going to connect and see now all of the locations that are available. I could use, for example, Western Europe. Click OK. And if I don't run my load test, it's going to kick off my load test inside of Visual Studio Online. So I hope by now our load tests here has finished, and it has. So here you could see our simple load test has run. We get a response time of 0.06 seconds. Your app response time is not good. It could be faster. We fired off 35,000 requests. There were zero failed requests. And here you could see kind of a graphical view of the number of requests per second. What is our average response time? We can see here the user load, which was constant at 25, and there's no failed requests. So this gives you a quick view experience of load testing your website using Visual Studio Online resources. If you want to do it more complex, you could just configure, create a new load test inside of Visual Studio and point it to Visual Studio Online. So again, it's quite easy to do so. Switching back, because I think pretty much nearing the end of this webinar. There we go. So load testing, whether simple or complex, you can do so. So we've seen all this. We can manage all of the steps. Now, we talked about application lifecycle management, and we have all of the services inside of Visual Studio Online. Does that mean that you need to use Visual Studio Online for every single piece of this entire cycle? Let's say you want to use Trello for defining your tasks, or you have a bug tracking system, for example, Jira, that is already inside your organization or that you already use. Well, can we integrate with those services? So this indeed is possible. So you can have Visual Studio Online, your account, and it can communicate with third-party services. And there's like dozens of services that we integrate with, which allows you then to interact with those. So for example, you could have Jira as your bug tracking system. The information from Jira can be or can be integrated inside of Visual Studio Online so that you still get the integrated experience of being able to assign a given source code change and link it to a bug work item, but still manage that bug inside of your bug tracking system. Or the same thing with defining your implementation tasks in Trello. You can do so, and you can kick off new functionality. If you change something, you could send, for example, an email that something has changed. So we have nice integration points pretty much for every single step inside of the entire application lifecycle management process. Okay, so this is quite nice as well. You don't necessarily have to use every single service, so it's not a big bang approach. So you can use the services that you like and still continue to use the services that you are using. Now, finally, is all of these services, what do they cost? And basically, we have a free lunch for you. So for small teams, for up to 5 users, Visual Studio Online is basically free. So we get you can get a team of 5 users inside of your team project, and you can create as many in projects as you like. Up to 5 users, you don't have to pay for them. What we add on top of that is we'll have 60 minutes of cloud build in there, so you can set up your hosted build server and have 60 minutes of build time, again, as part of your free offer. And in terms of load testing, we'll have 20,000, what we call virtual user minutes for load testing per month as well. So that's kind of the free part for the small teams. Let's say you have additional users. Well, you can basically add additional users on top of those 5 free users. And there's basically, we have the basic offer, and then there's basically professional and advanced. So the basic users, you can add at a price of $6 a month. And then as you go to the professional and advanced, note that you may say that's a significant difference, $6 versus $45. Note that they have also, they include using Visual Studio Professional as part of the online services. You can you can download Visual Studio on your machine and do local development. Yeah. So these basically include renting Visual Studio Professional. Okay. So on top of the free offer, you can add users as you like. And then secondly, for MSDN subscribers, they are also considered as free users. So on top of those 5 free users that you get anyway, you can add as many MSDN users as you like. So they don't count towards your user amount of 5. So just add as many as you like. Okay. So, and then cloud build minutes, cloud load testing, you can buy additional minutes as you go. And these are basically rated at the prices that you can see here. So just keep checking the website for additional information. Now, I hope after all this, that we can get the situation that we saw at the front of the deck, where we had a complex process in here, where you can see yesterday it worked, that we can get rid of this by using a structured software development process, and that we can actually get a streamlined software process by using the tools and processes in a structured manner. So a number of resources. So how do you get started with Visual Studio and Visual Studio Online? Just go to the website I showed you in the first demo, just visualstudio.com. Get started for free. In addition, you can get some, there's a number of trainings on Microsoft Virtual Academy, or also inside of our developer camps, we have a Code in the Cloud camp, in which we spend an entire day of Visual Studio Online. How do you work with it? A number of hands-on labs. So just check our developer camps for Code in the Cloud, and we'll give you a more in-depth introduction. With that, I hand it over to Louis.
Thanks, Nick. Thank you for the webinar, for the interesting content. I'll activate instant messaging so everyone can ask some questions. And I will take it over again, yes?
Okay.
So IM is activated. Okay, there we go with the questions. I leave it to you.
Let me check if there's any questions so far. Let's see that Danny is typing a message. Okay. So the question from Danny is, load test is only available for Azure websites. So no. So basically, with the load test functionality, what you can do is you can type any publicly available URL and leverage that for doing your load testing. So in my case, that was using a website hosted on Azure websites. But this could be any public site. I could just, you can even do load testing on Bing.com. Or on google.com if you'd like to. Any publicly available website, you can do the load test, a simple load test, but just as well the advanced load testing from Visual Studio. You could use any publicly available URL. Okay. This is something that we have in the old build system, is where you have gated check-ins. Gated check-ins or gated builds are basically where you check in code, and your code actually gets checked in if a build succeeds. If the build fails, the check-in will not be done. Right now, this functionality is not yet in the new build system, there's no commitment yet, but I would expect it to come also in the new build system, yes. No timeline on that one, though. But yeah, good question. If you really need it right now, you need to go to the old, need to use the old build system. If not, I want to thank you all for attending this webinar.